Thank you very much. It's a wonderful opportunity to be here to present this paper. Before we begin, I do want to thank our colleague Martin from upstairs, the National Centre of Geocomputation, who can't be here today, but without his help, this paper wouldn't have been possible. So, this paper sets out to identify areas of significant unionist electoral support in Southern Ireland. This paper is deliberately refraining from an examination of the six predominantly unionist counties in Ulster and will instead examine unionist support in the rest of Ireland. The data set created for this paper comes from the wonderful work done by Professor Brian M. Walker in the text Parliamentary Election Results in Ireland 1801 to 22 and Parliamentary Election Results in Ireland 1918 to 1992. So, Jack, do you want to briefly explain our map here?
Okay, so this map is, for those of you who are in the geography field, this is a Esri shapefile. This was built by Martin Charlton. So he is kind of Grant Bankwell's ghost. He's not here, but his work is here. And he built this on top of the barony's records, which exists as a shapefile, and the electoral division records created by the Central Statistics Office. So this is accurate to relatively to the actual dimensions of the country, and it shows every constituency in Southern Ireland from 1885 to 1910. Obviously, after 1910, we had a change of constituency boundaries for the 1918 election. So this is what we have in terms of a map where we're going to map all the elections that we could onto this. So,
yes, this data set encompasses election results from 1885 to 1932. We begin in 1885 as the controversy over the Home Rule Bill leads to a significant change in how candidates identify themselves. Prior to 1886, electoral candidates did not use the term unionist, but were instead divided into Liberals, Conservatives, and the Irish Parliamentary Party. After 1885, the term unionist became increasingly used by electoral candidates throughout Ireland. So due to the changes, as Jack mentioned, between the different voting systems utilised in Ireland, it's necessary to divide this paper into three distinct sections. The eight UK elections between 1885 and 1918, the five Irish general elections for the Dáil between 22 and 32, and the two Seanad Éireann elections of 22 and 25. And we're going to attempt to answer these four following questions. So, first of all, we're going to see if we can use the statistical programming language, OR, to visualise the different results chronologically and provide greater clarity on the levels of unionist support. Secondly, we're going to hope to see, are areas of significant unionist voters also areas with a large minority of Protestant or non-Catholic voters? Third, did areas with unionist voters switch over and vote for pro-treaty candidates in the Free State? And finally, did the short-lived Seanad Éireann provide an electoral outlet for loyalist or unionist voters in the Free State period? So, first section.
So this is an overview table. So they did not run unionist candidates. Obviously, 1885, they ran as conservatives, right? They ran in 49 constituencies. There were four individuals actually did run as loyalists, but they overall ran as conservatives. From 1886 onwards, they ran as a variant of unionist. And they ran in a decreasing and increasing level of constituencies, and which we'll show as the maps go on. But this is basically total electorate in constituencies where they stood for election. This is not the whole country. This is just in those constituencies. Total polled votes and total unionist or loyalist first preference votes and the percentages here. So that's what this signifies. And obviously you can see it mapped here as a series of graphs. Obviously, the magnification of 1918 is due to the enfranchisement of a large amount of people. So you have to take that one out. The 1885 is where the conservatives, and then we can see as it goes up and down, it changes year by year, pretty radically actually from here to here, and then goes back up again.
So sort of throughout this paper, it'll become apparent that the disparate yet widespread unionist support in the South lacks the cohesion or the centralised sort of planning that nationalist political movements at the time seemed to use so successfully. And you can see there's a lot of sort of peaks and troughs. 1892, perhaps unsurprisingly, is quite a big peak there.
So this is two maps created in R. These show the conservative votes in 1885 in the constituencies that they ran and the corresponding nationalist votes. This is type of map known as a chloroplether map, where the darker colors are for the heavier amount. So obviously, as it increases, it gets darker and so on and so forth. So that's what this map will look like. We have the next one there. And this is an example of a cartogram. It's called the density equalizing projection. You can see that there's a map of Ireland underneath it because it distorts the geographical element. So it's measuring the density. So it's an attempt to show that these constituencies, even ones which are geographically large, actually in terms of the amount of people, aren't that big. So Dublin is huge. The cities are quite large in proportion. And this is a map of the percentage turnout. So you can see actually the turnout is quite high relative throughout most of the country. It's around 70, 75% for a lot of the country, with obviously it falling off into the lower 60s and 50s in these parts here, west, parts of the south, parts of the southeast here as well. Okay, so this is 1886 in the aftermath of the failure of the Home Rule Bill, and you have all the candidates here run as unionists on the ballot paper. And you see that they're running in the same constituencies as before, obviously just a much less amount of them. And this map, just to be clear, does not include the Dublin University constituency, because that's not a geographical constituency. It's just based on the university electorate. So the unionists managed to hold those two seats, because it was a two-seater, two two-seater constituencies, Cork City and Dublin University. And the unionists held those two seats during this entire period. And any other time they got seats were from the rest of the country. Obviously, this is with the Parnellite split in 1892. So PN is Parnellite votes, anti-Parnellite votes. And then we go to the next one. And this is the unionist constituencies again. And they actually have a very good year this year. They elect four candidates. So two from this plus the two from the Dublin University.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's quite interesting is that, if I just jump forward once more, so 1892 at a glance, well, in Dublin County South, Horace Plunkett gets elected. Now, we mention him because this is sort of taking place, this conference at the centenary of the Irish Convention. And of course, he was one of the main instigators of it. But what's interesting is that he earns over 40% of the vote, so he earns quite a majority. Additionally, outside of the capital, we're seeing unionist candidates running constituencies that could be considered unionist heartlands. They're running in Tipperary, they're running in Kerry. Nationalist heartland, sorry. Right, what's quite interesting is this one, Kerry South. Roland George, Allenson win. He only wins 2% of the vote, but that he had a platform, that he did earn a couple of hundred votes is quite interesting. Now, he's actually quite an interesting character that after this, he will later convert to Islam and change his name to Shaikh Ratmullah Al-Farouk. He will also write a history of boxing and be the leader of the British Islamic League. So there you go, from Kerry South. In Kerry East, what's interesting as well is that Captain John McGillicuddy wins only 4%. Seems quite low. But 4 years later, there is a by-election, and you have sort of a repetition of the Parnell crisis, that the nationalist candidate, it's revealed that he had an affair, and subsequently in that by-election, nearly half the electorate doesn't show up. So the unionist candidate sees a massive surge in popularity and earns the highest number of votes that a unionist candidate has ever won in Kerry.
So this is the election of 1900, and what you have here is you have unionists running in a very small amount of constituencies, smaller, I think, by half than the 1902 election. And then you have independent nationalists, and then we have, next slide, yes, Parnellite nationalists and anti-Parnellite nationalists. So you have different groups running against each other. And of course, you see there's another geographic spread around.
What's quite interesting about 1895 as well is that within Britain, this sees the establishment of Lord Salisbury forms a majority with the Liberal Unionist Party under Joseph Chamberlain and begins what's called the Unionist Government, which will stay in power until 1905.
Actually, on this election here, let's see. No, let's go back to, where are we? We're in 1900 here? Yeah. So this is an election where actually a guy gets elected in Galway, and he is a former sheriff who wins in Galway kind of out of nowhere, and he takes his seat, and then a year later he's appointed to the Lords, and then they lose the subsequent by-election. So this is an example of unionist voters, even when they win, in their non-traditional areas of sort of South Dublin and the border region, they have actually ended up losing the gains by sort of being having people appointed to the boards or appointed to royal commissions or other that sort of things. So it's sort of, it's an odd choice that they kind of spent a lot of time getting him elected and then he heads off and then they lose the subsequent by-election.
I'll just jump forward briefly. Yes, this is him now. So it's in Galway City. It's Martin Henry Fitzpatrick Morris, who was the High Sheriff for County Galway in 1897. Now, later in life, this photograph is taken of him being director of the Liffey Power Syndicate. So he does play a key role in the Free State later on, sort of with the electrification scheme. What's quite interesting, sort of, this is one of the questions we wanted to ask, which is, are unionist candidates running in areas with, say, a large Catholic population? Well, the population of Galway City, according to the 1901 census, was 1,300, nearly 500, with 97% identified as Catholic. And this candidate wins over 40% of the popular vote, so, you know, there is popular support for him there. Elsewhere in the country, if I just jump back briefly here, inside Dublin, you can see that there's a unionist vote and then an independent unionist vote. Well, the incumbent within Dublin had been Horace Plunkett, and then in this election, an independent unionist challenges him for the South Dublin seat. His name was Francis Elrington Ball. Now, Elrington Ball, his father had been Chancellor of Ireland, so perhaps he was staking his ring in the or his hat in the ring, but he actually ends up losing the unionist seat for both of them, and a nationalist candidate gets in instead. So this is an example of this lack of sort of cohesion between unionist candidates here, that they drop the ball and lose their seat.
So this is a graph that shows the difference between the amount of candidates that they run and the amount of seats that they actually get. And you sort of see that there's marked differences where they go from nearly 50 when they're conservatives, then they go all the way down to about 13, and then they're back up again. And it's quite a big variance between they run a lot of candidates and they very rarely get more than four seats. And so you see that continually. But actually, as they get into the 1900s, they consolidate. They only run in a certain amount of constituencies. They seem to have put a lot of their effort and resources there, and they actually manage to get some returns. And then obviously, as we go towards 1918 again, there's another small surge of unionist candidates running throughout the country.
And indeed, just jumping back briefly once more, you can see it's sort of faded here, but there's also a candidate, a unionist candidate, running in Limerick City. And this candidate is quite interesting. Francis Edgar Kearney is his name, and he's put forward, very young, only 29 years old, and he's put forward as a Catholic unionist candidate. Now, he runs, but in the words of historian Timothy Maloney, he's very unsuccessful, that the unionists weren't expecting such a rigid unification of the nationalist ranks, and he ends up only polling 9% of the vote. So it is clear to see that there is this planning, thinking, okay, we need to put forward appropriate candidates in these areas. There's the example of the nationalist votes and the electorate inside 1900.
Yeah, again, I created another cartogram to show, again, the density of votes, and you can see that the cities are actually quite a bit larger. So even though they're only running in a handful, they're actually running where a lot of people live here in the cities, and obviously the smaller constituencies there. Moving on to 1906. Oh, yeah. Okay, so these are some religious maps. These were created by Ian N. Gregory. I don't know if you're familiar with his work. He's a geographer. He's based in the University of Lancaster. He did a book called Troubled Geographies. And I've reproduced these from one of his websites. And these are maps of Catholic populations at different times. So 1881, 91, and 1901. So this is just an example of showing, like, you know, if you think about the maps we just showed overlaid on these, you can see that, you know, they are running in areas where there are less Catholics, but they're also running areas where there's lots of Catholics. So it's not exactly kind of an even or either or type of situation. It is a bit more complicated than just, you know, all the unionists are only running in areas where there are significant minority faith voters, you know.
1906 is interesting because 1906, we don't see anything repeated where they run across the country. They don't put anybody forward in Limerick. They don't put anybody forward anywhere outside of Dublin. Now, jumping forward again, because 1906 was very unsuccessful for them, 1910, the dual elections see an increase in numbers. And what's quite interesting is that within Dublin South, we see one of the youngest MPs, Brian Rico Cooper, who we will hear more from later, winning over 50% of the vote. So at 26, Cooper was one of the youngest MPs ever to be elected to Westminster. But despite his success in Dublin South, within the other Dublin constituencies, unionist candidates lose out to nationalists. So it's clear that there's a lot of battling sort of going on in these local areas. It's not as clear-cut as you would have thought. Anything you want to say about that?
No, go on to the 90s. Okay, so this is my mistake. That's supposed to be labeled unionist, not nationalist. But anyway, so this is, again, it's a repeat. They don't run in Donegal, actually, again, and they just concentrate here and again in the Dublin region, and they start again in East Wicklow.
And what's interesting here as well is that in Galway, they run again. And he's the unionist candidate there, James Leslie Wanklyn, contests the Galway seat, but only achieves about 16% of the vote. That's a massive change from 10 years earlier, when we had the unionist high sheriff of Galway earns nearly 50% of the vote. So it's an interesting change there. We also see slight fluctuations for the votes polled for unionist candidates within Dublin. This is barely 11 months later, but Brian Rickle Cooper loses his seat. He actually earns more votes this time, nearly 50 more, but more people come out to vote for the local nationalist. Additionally, different unionist candidates are put forward in other constituencies where they'd run successfully last time and they end up losing. So there is that massive shake-up in just 11 months.
Okay, so this is where all the good maps stop and this is where the bad maps begin. So this is a reproduction from Wikipedia. This is the type of map that I would have grown up with looking at history books, and probably most people here would have. This is a color map of just the first preference votes. You have no idea what percentage these people won on. You just know that there was a wave election like this. Now, we were not able to build a 1918 constituency map because it takes too much time and we would have had to rebuild it from scratch. So we were able to build one and not be able to build the second one. But from this, I can give you some totals here of what the election was like in 1918. So in 1918, the Unionists ran again in Cork City. They ran in Donegal East, and then Dublin had been recut under the new constituency boundaries. They ran in Stephen's Green, they ran in Dublin South, they ran in Pembroke, Rathmines, Dublin University, obviously Monaghan County North, and Wicklow County East. So there actually wasn't an enormous change from what they had run in the previous elections going all the way back to 1886, with the exception of Cork, which they again come back to and they lose. And they only got two seats in this election anyway. And that marks the end of the Westminster section of this.
So moving on, elections to Dáil Éireann. Now, with regards to the elections for Dáil Éireann, due to the complexities of the PR electoral system and with the large number of candidates to run in the following election, we made an editorial decision for the sake of time for the presentation to count only those candidates who achieved the highest number of first preference votes in the next target constituencies. So these are what we would consider established unionist heartlands. Based off the results we just looked at, these are the constituencies where unionists have run time and time again and where there has been support for them. So for the next section, we're going to look at these five constituencies and see what candidates are coming up, what is the result. Now, certain constituencies changed their name under the new electoral system. For example, for 1922, Kildare and Wicklow are merged together to make one super constituency. But they'll change again in 1923, and we will indicate these changes as appropriate. So initially, in 22, one can see that pro-treaty or Cumann na Gael candidates will sort of come to the fore, but initially you can see that it is pro-treaty or coalition treaty candidates who are winning in these core constituencies. Now, I've highlighted independence there, but I don't want to make the connotation that independent candidates are former unionists. I just think it's interesting to note that these are two independent candidates running in what were originally unionist heartlands. And we'll see if they remain independent as the year goes on. In 23, we can see that independents are far down. Now, there's one independent in Donegal, and he will hang on to that seat up until 1936. Major James Sproul Miles is very interesting that he was a rugby player who went on part of a world tour to Canada, broke his leg there, managed to come back in time to join the British Army and served with distinction with the Royal Engineers. So he came back, and there was an interesting story about him driving around his massive Donegal constituency in a steam car, meeting all of his constituents. So he's an interesting sort of character, but he'll stay there and he'll represent them up until 36. But you can see across the rest of the country, what's quite interesting is that it's Cumann na Gael. Now, this is in the wake of the Civil War, so perhaps that might have something to do with that. But moving on then to 27, the first of the elections, you can see it becomes more disparate. It's more sort of party lines forming. And what's quite fascinating, actually, I think, is that Dublin City South, which one would have thought being a unionist sort of predominant zone, I mean, this is where Horace Plunkett won quite successfully in 1900, is the first to take on the new Republican Party, Fine Gael, or Fianna Fáil, sorry, with Sean Francis Lamass, the future Taoiseach. Aside from that, we're seeing independent candidate and independent farmer, and we're also seeing then Labour getting in Wicklow. Now, with the... Oh, sorry, I just wanted to mention as well, possible unionist support for the National League Party. Now, the National League Party was co-founded by William Archer Redmond, son of the Home Rule leader and a former British soldier. The National League Party was founded to appeal to those ex-servicemen or police officers, or people who felt slightly alienated or hard done by the Cumann na Gael government. And initially, they're quite successful in June 1927. They win 8 seats. And so I wanted to see, were any of these seats in our unionist heartlands? And indeed, they were. You can see 3 here, Donegal, Dublin South and Galway, are where these candidates win. Now, come September, they lose all their seats. And some of these candidates change party, which is interesting to behold. And indeed, in 1927, with the assassination of Kevin O'Higgins, we see, again, this sort of solidification of Cumann na Gael. Now, Major Cooper, Brian Cooper, who I'd mentioned to you earlier, he's back now, and as a Cumann na Gael candidate. And he is sort of the poster boy for our presentation. I think he's quite interesting that from Unionist in 1910, in 2 elections, and one which he gets elected as an MP, then to soldier, he serves with, out in Gallipoli with the 10th Irish Division. He then comes back and runs quite successfully as an independent candidate. He's in Dáil Éireann from 22 to 27, and he runs as an independent and gets elected in the June election, and then changes party to Cumann na Gael in September. So it's just quite interesting to find out about that.
Just on the point about maps for these, one of the reasons why it's very difficult to map the variety of constituencies here is because they're changing the boundaries. So you would actually end up having to build an artificial map that you would be building composites. So that was one of the reasons we didn't do that, because I felt that that would just be confusing for the viewer.
And finally, 1932. We can see again, it's grown very disparate. And of course, 32 is the election where Fianna Fáil sweeps the across the nation. And you can see, yes, 3 of these areas are now voting for Fianna Fáil. We still have our incumbent, James Spruill Miles, who will stay there. Alfred Byrne, independent, but he, of course, the shaking hand of Dublin, as he was known, is a former Home Rule candidate, and he remains that way for a long time. He's a very, very interesting character. But as well, we're seeing that Lammas has gone from sort of strength to strength in South Dublin. He's consistently earning more and polling more and more votes. So, sort of at a bird's eye view then, we can see in 22, these unionist heartlands are going for pro-treaty. They're supporting the treaty. 23, it's Cumann na Gael. 27, things grow disparate. And we see rise of independence and Fianna Fáil and Labour, etc. Now, September 1927, is this a... possibly a response to violence, the threat of violence, the perceived threat perhaps caused by the assassination of Kevin O'Higgins, that we see again this unification, solidification behind Cumann na Gael, the established government. And then in 32 again, we see it begin to fracture once more. So it's interesting that it seems that these former unionist areas do switch over and do become more slide towards republicanism. And finally, our final section, and our shortest section for the, some of you might be delighted, elections to Shannon Éireann. Now, these are just a handful of former unionists who, some of them were MPs, such as Horace Plunkett here, who end up in Shannon Éireann. Now, this data set is by no means representative. It is unfinished, and we can't really make any broad assumptions based off it. But what is quite interesting is that James Campbell there is appointed Cathaoirleach of Shannon, himself a very prominent former unionist candidate.
There is one issue as well, is that in the election of 1922, it's an election in that the Dáil elects people to sit in the Senate. It's not like an open election, so it's an internal divisions. And mapping those is very tricky, because to get full results of those divisions is also, in some cases, just not possible because the data wasn't kept. In terms of the Senate election of 1925, it was a 4.5-foot ballot with 76 people on it in a constituency that included the whole country, of which 19 were elected. Now, that can be mapped, but the problem is that we don't have all the totals to map it. We don't actually have all the vote totals. We know who was running, and that's about it. So that's a little bit more complicated as well. But those are the 2 elections we had for the Senate.
So, to conclude, briefly, We just wanted to bring back up our questions and see if we did address them. So the initial point, did we manage to statistically use this statistic programming language to visualize the different results? I think that we did. It's interesting to see, you know, these unionist candidates running with different areas. Secondly, are areas of significant unionist voters with a large minority of Protestants? Yes, we saw that with Galway, we saw that with Limerick. And did they switch over? They did. Now, our final question, it's inconclusive. As Jack said, it's sort of impossible for us to map it at this stage, but we would be keen to see in the future what these results will have. Thank you.